extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr, David Goss. Bing bong! Like, is it more fitting now that the O from New York, New York, or like it has a little more credibility? Because previously when we were doing that, there were no MLS Cup championships, no rings, no nothing residing in the tri-state area. In fact, I don't reside in the tri-state area. How you guys feel this morning? Been a little slow start, I feel like, for Kalen and Dave in the pre-meeting. Somebody just got off a plane. Somebody switched time zones. What's up? Too much for you?
Good, good. I got to see Goss on the field after the match, which is always a highlight for me, alongside all the festivities we'll get to in a bit as far as striptease, Sean Johnson being the MVP. It was a blast being out there, that, you know, crazy atmosphere and scenes in Portland. And then, I'm hanging in there now. I'm in Charlotte getting ready for this expansion.
Oh, whoa.
Right now, so, yeah. I don't even know where I am right now.
We'll tease that in a bit. It's Monday after MLS Cup, everyone. New York City FC are the champions, in case you didn't figure out that part of it from the intro. Where did this one rank for you, Dave? Like, Doyle and I were, you know, we did the post-game show. We're sitting in, respectively, my basement, his cat lair. So we don't know what it felt like. I need to know what it felt like to be in Portland at Providence Park to watch the home team come back in the 94th and then not get it done in PKs, and to see the blue side of New York paint the league blue.
It felt like I don't really own rain gear. That's not really part of my wardrobe.
Yeah, I saw you went with the you went with the red Bob Bradley, and that was not the right.
But then my jacket that I put over that does not last for rain. Neither did my boots. So I felt soaked through and freezing and cold. But in terms of where it ranks, it's up there. It's just one of those where you landed and you just felt it. My Uber driver's talking to me about it. You get in the city. There's a Timbers thing in every window. I flew out with a bunch of NYCFC fans coming from New York City. And they were all over having a great time. I think it was, 1,800, 2,000 fans that traveled?
Yeah, I heard between that number and, 2,500.
Yeah,
but, you
great.
Saw the march. You saw them in the stadium. They made their presence felt.
Yeah, and then they partied in my hotel. So it was really fun. I got off the shuttle back from the game after an epic day. I'd say that Felipe Mora goal probably ranks up there with the best moments I've ever experienced at an MLS stadium. Just allowed the energy and how it happened. And I get off the shuttle 4 hours later and you're exhausted and these fans are celebrating in the street. But then you see the actual trophy and it's like, oh, that's so cool that someone brought out. Turns out they weren't fans. That was the team. They just brought a speaker on their shoulder and they had to walk across the street from their hotel to the party hotel. And they're just blasting Pepas, just hanging out in the middle of the street in Portland, Oregon. The entire squad. It was ridiculous.
There were some great images in the hotel of fans sending us at Extra Time pictures of themselves with MLS Cup. I think Jonathan Sanchez has been blown up my mentions for just weeks, months, years now.
I don't think he's a big NYCFC fan. I don't think he really believes in this group that much.
No, I mean, he asked us to, avoid at all costs putting any respect on their name. And he said that in all caps. So we will avoid doing so for his sake.
He found me in the stadium.
He found you.
He was on me.
His level,
he was on me.
His level
Kaylee,
of extra time
weenie
beef is high.
We're standing there. And so the NYCFC fans, obviously, they're farther up. And so then when they won, they came down. But there's still like a break because it's an old stadium. So they're kind of like 10, 15 feet in the air. And he's at the front of the area. He starts screaming at me. And it was like a weird, quiet moment when the music had paused and everyone turns around and looks at me and he's just screaming at me to not put respect on their team's
correct.
Name. So
Jonathan Sanchez, this is your friggin' moment, man. You've been building your way to this moment for so long. This is the last time in this show we say your name. But by God, I have seen so many tweets, so much from you. I can only respect your doggedness and the fact that you got to celebrate this match, along with every one of those NYCFC fans everywhere.
It was a second. I took a lot of heat all week for everyone on this show, to be clear. A lot of people watched.
That's why we sent you. That's why we sent you, Dave. That's why you're there. You're the deflector. You're the deflector. Doyle and I hang back, and you just take all the abuse.
So pregame, we did a lot of work with Zarek Valentin, who was awesome, and it was really cool to walk around a Portland Timbers game with, like, a hero, and everyone's so nice to me, and everyone's hugging me. They don't even know who I am. So we walk up to Timbers Army, and he's taking pictures with people, and this guy asked me what I think. And I said, I think the Timbers are going to win 2-1. This is pregame. Then we go to do our hit, and he starts screaming at me. He goes, I saw you on the show yesterday, Matt Doyle. You said we would lose. And I was like, that's not me, man.
Bro, you just, guy told, too, like, you just we just spoke. You and I just spoke.
Well, he said I had lied to him. And then the guy two over goes, that's not Matt Doyle. That's David Goss. And I was like, that guy knows.
And also, and I predicted. Also,
The Higuain brothers had terrible takes.
Also, I predicted I predicted that the Timbers would win. So that guy.
So wow.
That guy was deep into his crappy IPAs.
No, I took NYCFC. I took NYCFC. I was the only
you
one
were the only
post game. I remember after the last one, and that's where I was like looking at him being like, dude, I picked y'all. Like, what?
It's me. Yeah.
Anyway, we gotta get rid of the fans, Kalen. We just gotta get rid of them. I mean, they're the problem.
Actually, shout out to Rox Fontaine did an interview with me pregame as well, and it was awesome. And, you know, really NYCFC support was amazing there.
Yeah.
I think on that side of it. And then the 94th minute, like the way the Timbers, I was right behind the goal and I was like, it was insane. I've never seen an MLS stadium rocking like that. Maybe Zlatan's goal in LA was, you know, maybe right up there. But this, because of the significance of it, to keep their, you know, trophy hopes alive was amazing. And then credit to Sean Johnson for stepping up huge. He deserved MVP. Second time he's rescued the team from, you know, late goals going the other direction and then coming back to win MVP was awesome to see Sean get his moment to shine. So, yeah.
We will talk more about Sean Johnson, about all the legacies made in this, about strip teases. You needed like a comma in that open, Kalen. You're like, strip teases, Sean Johnson. I was like, we just got to get a little break there. It wasn't Sean. He's the MVP.
Yeah, no, it's all Sean good. Kept it.
It's all good. Well, give me, before we move on here, give me a feeling for the environment, game day, like what it felt like on the field. Like, how did it compare to other cups? And then I always think that the best part of any MLS season is the moment after the final whistle, you know, from that point till about an hour and a half, 2 hours after the game, when people are sort of finishing up on the field, the lights are going off, but you've experienced these 2 hours of, you know, it's the exclamation point, and it's all this joy bundled and also despair at times for different parts, depending on which side you're supporting or on. What was this stadium like for you guys, and what memories will you sort of forever have? Give me the little scenes, you know, that you just can't get when you're not there.
It was wet. I'll start off. It was a wet, cold one to start, and an early kickoff at noon made it interesting. So in my hotel, there was a party across the, like a brunch party going on right across. So it woke me up bright and early. And then I went out to the pitch or to the stadium early, and, you know, you couldn't get in for a while. So there was just literally lines around the block of people waiting to go in. And it was, like I said, really kind of like a perfect Portland kind of scene where just feeling that energy. And then the other cool thing is there's just so many Portland, I feel like, keeps their former MLS players around and a part of the program. So you see from Borchers to, you mentioned Zarek, like Rodney Wallace was in hand. He brought out the match ball, or actually Ivy, his daughter, was able to carry the match ball out. And
Rodney Wallace had a busy week because he was a legend for both clubs.
Yeah, that's true. Saying,
when it was convenient, he had to flip back and forth.
Exactly. So it was cool. Like the whole, and then I was also there doing a behind the scenes thing, video production with BPC. So they had flown in a bunch of their guys that were there all weekend. Jeremy Bobisi was there, Marlon Hairston, Dom Dwyer, Justin Morrow, so many MLS greats. So it was really cool to be a part of that. And then, that just the atmosphere at that stadium, it's such a unique place. I just love that they've kept some of the, like, it feels like a, I don't know, some of the stadiums we've seen are brand new and have these incredible, like, luxury everything. And this one has this, like, deep history and kind of just, like, some sweaty parts to it that feel, it was hard to say because it was like a cold, wet day, but just like, it's got some character to the field. And then also they've got the new upgrades with the, you know, the suites and all that kind of stuff. But it made for a perfect venue, like right in the middle of the city. And not every city you go to, you feel that energy of like, this town is taken over by this team. Portland's always that way, but it was like times 10 this weekend with MLS Cup there. So, you know, heartbreaking, I have to mention, just because like Valeri, who we'll get to, and, you know, seeing a team lose at home is tough. But for the fans that I spoke to, like, heartbroken after the match, but I think they'll never forget that 94th minute goal and like the way that that team fought to try and stay in it and rescue things. So it was, that was a moment I don't think I'll ever forget. I'm sure a lot of Timbers fans won't either.
Give me your vignettes, Div.
Yeah. No, I would agree. You could definitely, in the only two games I've been to in Portland before were Seattle games, and one was a playoff game. And this was just the whole vibe in the city was on a different level. And I think what was said to me the whole time, and Zarek brought it up a few times on our show, it's like everyone has been waiting for this moment since they decided to join MLS, to host an MLS final. The highlight for me was probably Thursday night, where the fans sleep outside the stadium to go out and chat with them. And we've not really been out, or I haven't been out at games that much over the last 2 years. And so you had 500 fans sleeping outside in the freezing cold with fire pits, and everyone knows each other. So they're just like swapping between different groups, and everyone's bringing pizzas down the line for people and offering up Jello shots, obviously made of Captain Morgan and all of those things. And so we just hung out and we went to go do a video. The video we did was like, the video we did is like 90 seconds long. We were out there for 2.5 hours, just like talking to people about how long they've known the club, like been a fan. And
how many Jello shots you do?
Me, I just watched.
Just checking in.
You know, and the guy who was there, number one, was there Monday at 11 a.m. For a game that happened on Saturday, and I walk up and he goes, "Where's Bobby Warshaw? Tell him we don't like Bobby Warshaw in this city." So I felt the love immediately.
IPAs and now Bobby Warshaw just catching strays on this show.
It was a long one. And so that was really fun. And then game day, I showed up at 7:30 a.m. and you walk in the stadium, it felt like Monday Night Football because it's pitch black and raining with the lights on. Because it was dark the whole week. And so it was like this weird atmosphere of like, yeah, it's a day game, but it felt like an under the lights moment. And Timbers Army gets in the stadium around 9:30 a.m. For a noon kick. And so I went out to walk on the field with Zarek, and no one else in the stadium. And they kind of are waiting for something to do. And so they saw Zarek and he's like, "Let's walk over." So we start walking and they just get up and they start playing the drums and cheering for him. And it felt like they were cheering for me. And it was a great moment. And it was one of those things I'll never forget.
Just hoovering up a little bit of Zarek's
I bet some of them were cheering for you. All right. There had to be at least two or three people in the Timbers Army who were like, "That's David Goss.
All the others were actually cheering for Matt
Doyle. That's Matt Doyle. I'm going to cheer for him."
Exactly. Who's that? Oh, we're cheering for somebody. We're cheering for somebody, man. It looked awesome.
I think we both said, that Felipe Mora goal happening the way it happened, there was someone crying behind me before it happened. Like, they couldn't believe that they were going to lose and not score. And I thought people were just going to start falling over. And when Valeri lines up that shot in extra time in front of Timbers Army, if that had gone in, I think the stadium would have collapsed. That maybe was louder than the moment the goal goes in, because everyone sees it happening. And they wanted it so bad for him. And so it was special. It was really cool. And then, as Caitlin said, away support when it's like that. Like, you could hear NYCFC, especially from the goal for like 30, 40 minutes after. You could hear the NYCFC supporters everywhere in the stadium because they were so loud and so coordinated and such a tight group. So it was pretty cool.
Look, we have a lot to talk about today. I feel like we've already sort of giving you some of the sights and sounds, and I want more of that if you guys have it. I do want to shout out the one perfect bracket in 26,643 entries at MLSsoccer.com.
Stop it.
Clear window. Somebody named Patrick. This could be fake. This could be literally MLS Reddit, like yanking all of our chains and just photoshopping this and making up somebody named Patrick. But if there is a person named Patrick out there who used the username Clear Window, and you want to hit us up and tell us how the hell you did this, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Would love to explain to the rest of the MLS world what it is that went through your mind to get a perfect bracket on this one. One of 26,643. Go to MLSsoccer.com, folks. Charlie Bohm has a bunch of stuff for you on NYCFC's big moment on the night, on what's next for them as well, because we'll talk about some contract situations or some possible transfer situations they got to figure out. That's the same for every team in this league. Steve Zakuani had three takeaways on MLS Cup. Greg Seltzer had the player ratings, as always. We're turning the page on this show. We're turning the page just in general. Like, it's 48 hours later, and it already just sort of feels like ancient history. I guess that's the pace at which this league works sometimes in the world we live in. Because Tom Bogert has your Charlotte FC expansion draft analysis and interviews. The protected lists come out later today on this Monday. The draft is on Tuesday. Of course, Kalen teased that's why he is in Charlotte. So we'll follow along. I believe that is Tuesday night, but I don't want to give you bad information. So go to MLSsoccer.com to figure that out. Go check out the call-up vlog. They were on the field at Providence Park. They were all in the business at MLS Cup all week long doing some really, really cool stuff. So go check that out on YouTube. Bunch of interviews, all the vibes. I'm pretty sure they sang some more, and I'm jealous of that, certainly. Try to get my chops going here on Extra Time, but doesn't fit not as well same. With our brand. And it's just not. So December 15th. Is Wednesday. You have the expansion draft Tuesday. Wednesday, free agency opens, and you have end of year waivers. And then the 17th and 23rd, that's reentry stage 1 and 2. Our final show of the year, by the way, folks, is Thursday. So we've done this has been a long, busy year, a long, busy 2 years, to be honest. But that'll be our last show.
Power rankings coming out.
Yeah, power rankings will be part of that show. I actually have, yeah. We also have 45 minutes on LAFC just bolted into that one.
I look forward to the first power rankings of this year when NYCFC's not number one.
Of course. Well, I have a question at the end of this like MLS Cup rundown of like who would be favorites for MLS Cup right now, just to sort of seed that. So we'll get to that. Think on that, boys, as we prepare. So stay tuned to MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app. Tom Bogert will join us on Thursday. We'll try to look ahead through the holiday period of like, what do you need to watch? You know, will Jozy Altidore be back in Toronto? Sure seems like no. Where could he go? All those little storylines. So if you have thoughts on that, hit us up. Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. 401-206-0MLS at Extra Time on Twitter. That's usually the best way to get at us. We follow that pretty intently. Let's get back into the game and let's start with the biggest topic, which is this. What did Sky Sports want to know about this morning, Kalen? How are they thinking of MLS Cup across the pond? I'm just curious because this is like the big broad strokes. You know, we're here to do the little like Bob Ross, you know, like leaflets. I need broad strokes. What are they talking about?
They played the entire 2-minute Ronnie Dyla strip show on international TV. It was amazing. I like ran out of things to say about it, and I couldn't help but start laughing because he was just like dropping down into the push-ups. Like he took his time with it. It was pretty incredible scene. So, but good for him. You know, might as well get down and celebrate.
What did you think about that? Like it's something he did before in Norway. Strom's Scott, yeah. I don't know if I said that right. Charlie surely could correct us, but it seemed like in Norway he bared it all. We almost went like, I hesitate to say the word on this show, but he almost went a little bit of man thong on that.
They were. Wait, there's a British term that's absurd for it, and I can't think what it is, so I'm not going to say it.
Yeah,
I don't want to get caught. I don't want to get caught.
Don't get caught out here. What'd you think about that?
I thought the choice of underwear was a little bit
bold.
It was a better choice. I think the other one might have been more impromptu, where I think this one was clearly prepared for. So he had his routine down. I feel like the technique was good. Broke it down quite well. Push-ups, 9. I would have liked to see 10. Just kind of to like
counted them.
Round things
or
he, off.
Or everybody yeah. counted them 4. You can't stop on 9 in that situation.
I haven't been doing. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't.
Anyways, it was amazing. It was amazing. And I think part of it is just like, I don't know, to win on the road is a, you know, I mean, it's so hard to do, especially with that atmosphere. And then especially with the 94th minute goal. And NYCFC had kind of sunk back into 5 in the back near the end of the match to try and hold on to the win. And it's one of those where if you go 5 in the back and you see it out, and which they were close to doing, it's like, okay, great decision there. You get the way through. And if not, then you begin to question yourself. And then they went back and switched to 4 in the back for the extra time period, and then Sean Johnson steps up. But I think that was the, you know, so they had to make some difficult decisions in that one. And I think if you look at this NYCFC team, like resilience comes to mind as a word, where they just, even in situations where we've maybe seen NYCFC cave in those kind of difficult moments in the past, or when it's at close margins, and especially with the kind of disappointing way that they've, you know, whether it was in the playoffs last year, in the penalty shootout to Schlegel, and then this time you see them come back in New England, where similarly they get a red card to Tati, and then they also get the late goal from Tejan, and they find their way through, and then Sean Johnson steps up as a match winner. And you know, he didn't have to do everything all game. I thought the center back Chanel and Collins were phenomenal. Just kind of, you know, not a pairing you would want to play against. Just so tough, can turn well, want everything in the air, just really solid. But Sean, in the biggest moments, after times where the team has really sort of almost begun to look like they're going to cave, he's stepped forward and made the big saves and the big moments. On the road. And that's ultimately, I think, going to be the legacy of Sean in this one. We can get into that. But just for me personally, like looking from his history, he was a rookie when he came into Chicago. He was like, I think 19 years old, like a third round draft pick, which is insane to think about as far as like a 19 year old guy with that much talent in front of him. I don't think that would happen anywhere again. But he was already at that point, like, the most mature guy. I was like asking him for life advice, of, like, you know, a vet on the team at that point. But like, you know, if you look at all the changes, multiple managers, multiple, you know, a lot of changes to the roster over the years. And he has just sort of always been the steady hand, and, you know, is able to really play out of the back, make big saves when he needs to. And then ultimately in the playoffs, in those crazy moments, like the first two saves back to back, you could just feel some of the energy where I was looking, I was right behind the goal. I was looking at Timber's Army, and you could just feel the anxiety there. And then Maxi's goal, where he just has this like big reaction after he finishes his penalty, and he's had some problems with penalties in the past, and he steps up also against New England and then steps up again in the final. You could feel that energy then switch, and then Collins also has two game winners and now a trophy winner from the penalty spot. So I would say really impressed by the resolve of the NYCFC team. And Sean Johnson, the captain, obviously is going to get a lot of the credit, which he should.
By the way, that second Sean John save, massive as well, because Alfredo Morales missed his. So that's the rhythms and the back and forth of a PK shootout in this situation. You have Tati, who makes it, okay, off to a good start. Save on Mora, all right, we're on one. Okay, missed by Morales. Oh, no, that's where you start to feel maybe it isn't our moment, and Sean John really sealed it there. Should we just do the Sean John section right now? Maybe we can jump around a little bit. Let's do it. Sean John is fourth now, by the way, in all-time appearances in MLS for a goalkeeper at 321. He was actually a fourth-round Super Draft selection. He was 51st overall. He's the final generation Adidas player selected in the 2010 MLS Super Draft. He is likely, I don't think that he will pass Nick Raimondo. I might be wrong because he's 32. I mean, if he played till 40, he might be the all-time leader in goalkeeping categories in this league by the time he's done. TBD, I mean, that there's a lot to go into that, longevity, et cetera, whether he wants to do it or not. I mean, obviously he has the talent to do it. What's this do to his legacy? This has been the moment that he's been waiting for a long time. There wasn't success in Chicago. That wasn't his fault. NYCFC has been wildly successful since he arrived. They've been the best team in MLS in the regular season. Best team, period. Most points. Like, that's the measurement. They have it. But neither he nor the club had anything to show for it. Like, they had all this success, but they were mostly known as bottlers. I don't know if I said that in the right way, but... Like, what does this mean for Sean John and his legacy? How does this change how we will remember him? Does it change sort of the place he has in the hierarchy of all-time MLS players and goalkeepers?
Yeah, I think so. If you win MVP in an MLS Cup and you have two penalty kick shootouts that you win for your team on the road to, you know, winning a championship, I think that's something that it becomes your golden moment that everyone will always think back on when they think of you first, and everyone will always reference to. And I feel, and I don't know what you guys think of, you know, Sean Johnson's been a vocal leader in this league for a while. And what stood out to me about the game, by the way, was after regular time, he was the one that had all the players in a circle, and he was the one talking the entire time. Maxime Cheneau was talking to the ref the whole time. He was still pissed about the Lloris Mabiala.
He had the ice pack on, and
he's,
you know,
chasing refs. But Sean Johnson was the only one I saw talking for NYCFC, and every player was around him. And when you look at Tavon Gray's face when the goal goes in. And just for a young kid to then be able to get through extra time at a high level of play, I think you're looking at Sean Johnson's influence and what he did. So that's what will stand out to me for this game. But I feel like he's been a guy that I've always talked about in that conversation. You've always had to justify it to people. It wasn't assumed, right? When you bring up Stephen Fry, when you bring up Nick Grimando, obviously, when you bring up some of these goalkeepers, people are like quick to be like, yeah, that's one of the best.
Kevin Hartman obviously has all the, you know, trophies and time with the Galaxy.
I was talking more like over the last 5 years, guys in the league.
Gotcha.
Like if I bring up Gaese, I think everyone's like, oh yeah, that's a great goalkeeper. I don't know that you'd get that with Sean Johnson in the past. I think it was a fight with some people, and I don't think that'll be the case anymore.
What do you think, Doyle? Where do you think he can end up in sort of this hierarchy? Like I said, it's Raimondo, it's Hartman, it's Cannon, then it's Sean John. Sean John's going to pass Joe Cannon next year to be third all time.
I mean,
he may spend two decades in this league.
Yeah, if you do that, then you'll certainly be remembered, and this performance will be remembered. One of the great shootout performances by a goalkeeper I can recall. It's not just the saves. It was him giving stink eye to the Portland Shooters every time they you know, walked up to the spot. It was, you know, it was theatrical, and it was a hell of a lot of fun to watch. He's a borderline national teamer. You know, we might see him as the third keeper, maybe even the second keeper next year at the World Cup, should the U.S. make it. And, you know, should there be an injury, or maybe he blows up and has an even better year. You know, I think of him at that, like, Kevin Hartman, Zach Thornton type of level, where he just has been like a top six or seven keeper in the league for a good long while, some years, maybe even, you know, top two or three. I thought in 2020 he was, other than Turner and Blake, he was the best keeper in the league in 2020. This year I thought he wasn't as good in the regular season. Like, if you look at NYCFC, the way they played, should have been a 60-point team. Part of the reason they weren't is because Sean Johnson had kind of a rough regular season. Nobody's going to remember that, not after what he did in the playoffs. That it's kind of awesome to see, because he's, by all accounts, he's a great dude. And he's been, you know, kind of a rock that a lot of NYCFC success has been built upon over the last 5-6 years now. And it's nice to see him get his moment. And this will be remembered in the NYCFC fan base the way Steph Fry's save against Josie was remembered in that Seattle fan base. Just a spectacular moment. It's, you know, a game-changing type of performance, and one that culminated with a, you know, with an MLS Cup win, with the franchise's first MLS Cup win. And that, like, no matter where, no matter how many games, Sean Johnson could retire tomorrow, and no matter what, he will still be remembered and revered in the NYCFC fan base because of that, and justifiably so.
He's not going to retire tomorrow, too. And this NYCFC team, and we'll get to it as far as what could happen for them. But that franchise seems like it's in a good position going forward to potentially fight for more trophies, right? And this was one where I don't know, you know, we talk about it, and NYC supporters will say that they expected to do this. But this was supposed to be New England's year. This was supposed to be, that was the best team in MLS. That was the team that was supposed to be the team of destiny. And NYCFC, I think, kind of maybe jumped ahead a little bit to
the XG team
of when they
year.
Were supposed to. Yeah.
NYCFC.
XG, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens with Tati. We'll see what happens in going ahead. But I think there's a chance that, you know, Sean's in a really good position to win more silverware. And, you know me, I'm always all about MLS Cups. What do you do in the playoffs? You know, what is that? I think that changes people's legacy in a big way. And I think Sean has the chance to continue to build this legacy, because we've always said, okay, yeah, steady, solid, you know, can be spectacular at times, and, you know, just a great player. But I would say now this puts him up an echelon as far as, like, in those greats of MLS goalkeepers with, at 32 years old, with time to spare ahead of him, and a franchise that, you know, is going to go out and spend money and continue to be ambitious to win trophies. I think he should get a chance based off this performance through the playoffs with the national team, a more of a legit chance to get an opportunity to push up and challenge. And we've seen Berhalter give an opportunity to players based on form. Matt Turner at a certain point was not the presumed starter or, you know, national team player. And we saw him emerge based on his form. And if we look at goalkeepers and we're going to judge on form as well, I think he's made a pretty strong case to get a bigger opportunity here. And I know there's a camp going on right now. I'd expect him to have a couple of days to celebrate, but be in there. But I would see Berhalter giving him a bigger look as far as the national team goes and seeing if he can, you know, even make this a bigger competition for places there.
Yeah, huge congrats to Sean John. I mean, it's just nice to see, you know, how to put this. I mean, he's been playing in this league for as long as I've been covering it. It's nice to see guys that have put so much time and energy and effort into their teams, into their careers, into this league, into our soccer culture, have that moment after all that waiting. And it's the same thing I thought about this, the quote-unquote core for NYCFC of Sean John, Chanot, and Kyans, and Maxi. All this time and effort and energy that it all just sort of come up, you know, snake eyes for them, really, like just and embarrassingly so at times in big moments of like, this is the expectation. Can you meet it? Like fold and flop. And to not do that, you know, we heard from James Sands and others throughout this run of like the resiliency that he now felt, the backbone that he felt in the team. To see them do that is awesome. And who knows for Sean John? Maybe he sticks around long enough, he'll be coached by Pep Guardiola, who apparently watched this game. Here's the quote from Pep. Quote, we watched it, was really impressed with the extra time to concede a goal in the last seconds. You can be destroyed. Huge compliment for the organization. Let's dive into the game just a little bit, and we'll get back to, there's so much more to digest here, whether it be Maxi Morales or Diego Valeri and Sebastian Blanco, etc. And maybe that's where we can just start, is Blanco, the lineups, and sort of the setup for this. I asked Doyle on the show, Kalen and Goss, whether starting Sebastian Blanco was a mistake for Gio Savarese. Of course, he had the hamstring injury. He did not play, though he was available against RSL in the conference final. Doyle said, yeah, it's a mistake. Charlie said, yeah, I agree. Do you think it was a mistake to start Sebastian Blanco for the Timbers?
I don't. I don't think it ended up being... I don't think he was effective particularly. I don't think he was... I don't think it worked. But as far as it being a mistake, I'm thinking about the decision-making process that goes into it. And for me, if you have your best player healthy and ready to go, and he was able to play, how long did he stay into the match?
60 minutes. Like
60 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
If you can get 60 minutes out of him, you go for it. Because there's a couple plays where they win the ball and in transition, they get out and they find him and takes a long shot. And like, look, it didn't end up... like smashing it, but for that risk, he's got that sort of in him as far as a guy that can just kind of change a game. And the way that Portland set up was pretty defensive from my perspective. I thought they sat back.
They had to do that because they had to do that because they started Sebastian Blanco. That's why it was a mistake. Once you're starting Sebastian Blanco with a bulky hamstring, you're not going to be able to come upfield and possess the ball or press like they did against RSL. Starting Blanco, even though he's their best player, boxed Gio Savarese in, tactically speaking. It was basically a concession that the entire first hour was going to be played with the ball on NYCFC's foot. And by the 65-minute mark, NYCFC had like 65% possession, and I think Portland had like four shots. And
but that only changed 60 minutes. What are you going to do? And that only changed 30th.
No, you bring him on for the final half hour. You don't know.
But why would you bring on your best player for only 30 minutes in your biggest game?
Because you don't know that he's actually going to be good for an hour. And to be fair, he wasn't. The final half hour he was on the pitch, he was invisible. But you know down the stretch, you're going to be throwing the kitchen sink at it. You know that. This is a final. And if Portland was throwing the kitchen sink at it at the end there. It did work out for them, but wouldn't you rather have Sebastian Blanco on the field for that? Especially when you're bombing away from 30 yards with some of those shots. I think it boxed them in tactically, and it made for the only chance Gio had to change the game was to take a wild-ass risk and throw the kitchen sink at it. And it worked, but part of the reason it worked is because Ronnie Dyla was way too slow to make a sub. If it was Thiago Andrade or Talis Magno in there instead of Jesus Medina at the end, it's 2-0 in the 85th minute because they would have been running away from Portland in the open field and getting in on goal there on Steve Clark. So I just
I don't I get what you're saying. I don't think Portland could have come out and played the way they did against RSL. I think NYCFC would have cut them apart.
Yeah.
Because when, to your point, when Medina, if Medina finishes a chance, it's there. Every time the game opened up, this Portland team got ripped apart by NYCFC in transition. So I think you really didn't
that's
have a choice.
True. No, that's not. That's really not true.
Yeah, it is. If Jesus Medina could touch a soccer ball in the final third, it would have been 3-0. But I'm not kidding. And every time it felt like it opened up, that's better for Portland's attack. NYCFC looked more dangerous going the other way. And so I think for Portland, that's kind of the way they were going to play it anyway. And you want the first goal in a game in front of your home crowd.
So you sit back? That was, so you sit back? Why? If you want the first goal in the game, you know, against or in front of your home crowd, why not play the way you did against RSL when you got the first goal within 4 freaking minutes? You can't do that. You can't do that if Sebastian Blanco's on the field.
I think they would have lost.
You're not
very
playing
quickly.
Against RSL. Yeah. I think that that's how they play. Like, we've seen Portland in big matches over the years consistently do this, where they sit back and then they try and hit on the break, and they have the counter attacking ability, and then they have Sebastian Blanco who can find a moment.
You know what? Two times they didn't do that were MLS Cup in 2015 when they got the first goal off of high pressing, and last year in the MLS's back tournament. And oh, those happen to be the two times they actually won.
Well, the 2015 was, that's not Gio Savaresi.
That's fair. So
it's a different manager, but I think I think that was going to be their sort of plan to begin with. If there's a place to be critical of Savaresi, which I'm happy to be, it would be waiting to bring Diego Valerian until the 89th minute. Now, it ended up being, you know, working out as far as getting that goal to equalize, but I was like, are we leaving this a little bit late here? Like, are we bringing on some players to be able to try and change the game or actually try and get into the attack? And he ended up, you know, having a couple opportunities in the extra time period. And maybe there was concern that he couldn't, like, you know, that if, in case this did go. But boy, that was one where I was like, that could have been a little bit scary, where if you lose that 1-0, I think there would have been some big question marks to say, why is Diego Valeri being waited until the like last 2 minutes of the match to get into the game?
You guys want to talk about the New York City goal? We're talking about why the Timbers didn't get a goal. And can I just say that the timing of the siren, just absolutely impeccable, just as a background noise for that entire exchange right there. Tati gets the goal, no surprise there. Comes off of a bad foul from Claudio Bravo on Tevan Gray. Just no reason to take him down in that situation. In comes Maxi. Maxi hits a great ball to the back post. Nobody marks Tati. That's crazy. Shouldn't happen ever, let alone in a final at home. And Tati nods it. And then apparently, you know, look, Steve Clark, you can argue about whether he should have done better. You know, I'm sure that he would say he should do better. I'm not sure that that necessarily means that he had like some howler a la 2015. In fact, I don't think it does at all. But fact is, Portland go down 1-0. And when they go down, and we're talking about their style of play, they have a real hard time coming back. So they go down. What did you guys think of that particular play? I mean, I don't want to pile on Claudio Bravo because we have done on this show before for defensive stuff. And oh, by the way, the Timbers moves just came out. Jose Van Ranken as well. They're working through a Chivas transfer with him. But, you know, Bravo, I think based on what I saw, probably should have been tracking Tati and he didn't. What is that moment in the game for you guys? Whether from the NYCFC side of set piece brilliance or from the Portland side of like, ah, God, for the first time since that Sounders loss, I think that was the stat, we allowed a goal off a set piece. No sirens, no chat. Is that what we're in? What do you think about that, Dave?
Sorry, I started looking at the Portland Timbers moves because you said it. I think giving
I can't
up a goal...
I can't throw out distractors into this.
Yeah, not at all. yeah, I don't know. It was a brutal moment to give up the goal in terms of the flow of the game. It was deserved for NYCFC, I think. But obviously going straight into halftime. And these are some of the issues that the Timbers have had of obviously the foul from the fullbacks who are more dangerous. And then I think we've talked about a lot how much better they've gotten on set piece defending. And that's been a big part of them turning it around and being a more solid defensive team over the course of this. What is it? 2 month run now. I think for their like winning streak and being positive. So all of that all of a sudden goes out the window in the biggest moment of the season against the Golden Boot winner, the most important player. And it just feels like for Portland, they didn't have a ton of margin for error. On pure soccer, NYCFC was the favorite in this game. On depth, on quality of roster, on the soccer ideas and the way they play. And Portland's one advantage was being at home, so it felt like a 50-50 split. You can't make mistakes like that in a final, and that's how you end up getting that's how you end up behind and end up losing an MLS Cup at home.
Also, that's what Tati does. Like, they have Kayens and Chanel crash the middle, and then Tati goes to the back post. If you look at even on the set-piece goals against Atlanta in the first round, again, Tati just sort of continues to find that back post every time. And so the matchup was strange, and he's actually much better in the air than I think teams really give account for as far as their personnel decisions go. And he gets up and does it. I thought that Clark probably could have done better there as well too. Like, he just doesn't quite, it squirts right underneath him. It's a tough one because it's wet and it comes down sort of right at that bounce right in front of him, which is what you're supposed to do as a striker, is to hit it down. But just anything a little bit more solid on that. And I thought he could have maybe pushed it past the post. So, but yeah, the timing of it as well, just before halftime, because I actually felt New York City were the better team in the first half, as Doyle and I agree on that, depending on how you decide how you know, if that was
now I disagree
because of Wanda. But I was like, if NYCFC could get to halftime, even at 0-0, that still would have been a good position for them. But then to go up the goal on the set piece, and I thought they were pressing more in the first half, that really gave them a lot more looking ahead. So, but yeah, that set piece and Tati, we've seen it a time again. And I think partly it's because those other guys crashed the box and create a distraction that allows him to kind of find like good strikers to, especially on that back post. He goes there consistently.
Immaculate service too.
Yeah, I was going to say, how about Maxi in this game? We talked about, and I love to see it, you know, people talking about that core that came in all week in the lead up to the game. Maxi played what? He covered the most ground of anybody in this match. He played 120 minutes. There was a moment where it was like, I don't know if he's going to continue.
It looked like he had a cramp in his left calf that he was able to just run through over the course of 5 minutes, like right before that NYCFC goal. But I was in DM with somebody. I was like, Maxi's done. And then if Maxi's done, NYCFC's done, because like he's so important.
That's been the case for a long time. Yeah. 34 years old. What did this mean for him, Doyle? Like, we always talk about this show otherwise. It's just the way, in particular, MLS works, but soccer leagues work. You talk about the legends of the past, and a lot of times those legends are nines, tens, like that have this oversized sort of importance or profile. You know, Maxi, I think, he's been sort of on the underappreciated side of this. We go to Sean John, it's like, well, being a winner changes things. Mm-hmm. How did it change things for Maxi?
I think in the same way. You know, Maxi has been one of the best number 10s in the league. Some NYCFC fans will say he's the very best number 10 in the league over the last 5 years, but he's certainly been among them. His engine, his ability to not just play the final ball, but to arrange chess pieces on the board. It's like prime Pipe Higuain. You know, he's just so brilliant at that. And it was nice to see him get rewarded with a trophy, because he has been, a truly great player in this league over the past half decade, and kind of the face of NYCFC in a lot of ways. He was the first signing where it felt like they were moving away from Lampard, Pirlo, Davavia, and into like, okay, we're going to try to be less about having big names and more about having a team that can win. And in a lot of ways, even though Tati Castellanos has, you know, been the team's best player this year, and I don't think there's much debate about that, the team is still built around Maxi and what he can do. And what he did in this game, and this is another reason why I think it was kind of a mistake to start Blanco and defend in that shell, is he's really good at directing pieces in order to get the left fullback up and then the right fullback up. He, like, that the whole midfield works together, but Maxi's at the heart of it. And if you go back and you watch the game, they were constantly bringing both those guys up and spreading the field from touchline to touchline and putting Van Ranken and Bravo into positions where they not only had to make plays, but where they had to make decisions. And that's how you go at the Timbers. That, like, if you unless you could get at him in transition, which they really didn't do until kitchen sink time at the end. But like the way you go at the Timbers is to make those fullbacks defend. And to their credit, I thought Bravo and Van Ranken were both mostly very, very good. But there was, you know, there was the one time when Bravo wasn't particularly good, and that led to the goal. And a lot of it came from Maxi just being able, like, he's a coach on the field, and he's not going to be remembered as a Valderrama, you know, or an Echeverry type magician. And I get that, but what he does is, as a like a modern type of number 10, it's beautiful to watch. And like, if you're a young number 10 listening to the show, go, you know, watch what Maxi does and play like that, and you'll be really, really good.
And one just of the keys fun. With him, I was just going to say, is how hard he works, because the team has, we talk about that core, the team has changed a lot around him, and so he's had to fit in with different pieces. And he played with Villa for a few years. Then you add Tati. He had Jack Harrison. You take him out. They've moved pieces around him. Obviously, you lose Alex Ring coming into this year. And so that's one of the things that stands out with why Maxi's been so key to them as a signing, is because he has, one, been consistent. So you always have that quality. But two, his ability to shift with the different players that have come in and been a part of it. And I agree with Doyle. I think his signing was that turning point. Then the next piece was Yangel Herrera. And I think NYCFC figuring out that the best way with this team wasn't loaning guys from Manchester City, but kind of being that gap from South America and Central America to potentially going to Europe later on. And you look at the rest of this roster, and Santi Rodriguez and Talis Magno, and what all these players may end up being in the future. But I think you get players that are a little bit more committed to what's going on here, and it's a better spot to maybe bring them into your system and teach them. And I think those have been the two keys to what they've put together in this roster, besides that back three. And Maxi Morales is a huge part of it.
Who would we compare him to? Like, can you compare him to somebody in MLS past? Javi Morales, for some reason, is kind of popping out to me as a guy.
That's what, you know, I was thinking
one
of.
Title, a team that was at the top of the top of the sort of heap for a consistent period of time, and that you were the linchpin for.
Yeah,
if you're looking at his career right now in MLS, Maxi's got a regular season and obviously postseason's a little different, but right around 100, and I'll just combine them, right around 145 appearances and 26 goals and 66 assists during his time. They've been the best regular season team in the league, and now they have an MLS Cup. This did a lot for him, and he deserved it. He deserved it. And you sort of spoke about
it there,
Dave.
Against Philly as well.
Yeah, it's like they went from saying, okay, well, instead of being the, who wants to come here? Hey, Frank, is that you? Hey, Andrea, you like New York City? That's cool. Like, they decided they were not going to be like a way station for guys on the way out. They were going to be a way station for either guys on the way up or who needed a spot to spend their prime. It worked out pretty well for them so far. Anything else in the game itself? Do we want to talk about the 94th minute goal? Like, a lot of, in the moment, obviously, Timbers fans were like, oh, hell no, no foul. And NYCFC fans were freaking out. And NYCFC fans, obviously, down the line in PKs got what they wanted in the end. Did you guys think that was a foul on Larys Mabiala? On Maxime Cheneau? Maxime was, and rightfully so, you know, I'm not, he was milking that. You know, you'd kind of mentioned him going after the referees. I mean, this man had an ice pack on his face in between the two periods of extra time. He was really trying to get the makeup call down the line. I thought that was absurd. Like, look, if you needed it then, where are you in celebrations? Like, your face is fine in celebrations. Like, you don't need the ice pack then, but you do need it. It was
a
funny.
Because you got that Heineken. The Heineken does the
I guess
same
so. You just spray me in the face with the champagne, guys. Like, just right in the eye. Just really cool me down. What'd you think of that particular play? Good for a play on there? Or do you want the foul called?
If I wanted the foul called, I wouldn't be able to live with myself. So I'd say no foul. Come on, man. It's drama. This is the energy. This is what we live for.
Also, yeah, if the game, just as a neutral, like if that goal didn't happen, I'd say the game would have been all right. Like, it was all right. You know, it's like atmosphere, tense final, of course, was great. All that, all the lead up to it. But that moment just completely sent this game into a whole nother stratosphere for me as far as MLS Cups go. Just to have that 94th minute goal and like the drama around it. Yeah, Cheneau like running to the referee and the ice pack, that was all a part of it. And then the penalty shootout as well. So it definitely took the game at, like, to another level. And like, even just when I'm remembering, like, going, looking around, I was right behind the goal as it happened, as I mentioned. And like, there was this woman who was sitting there and she was just full tear. I mean, Maura was crying too, but like, this woman was full tears crying, like immediately overcome with emotion. And like, just some of the scenes around that, I'll probably never forget. It was wild. But I was like, for the piece I was working on, I was like, a lot of it was focused on Sean. So I was right behind the goal filming to see like the moment when they blew the whistle for him to celebrate. And then I was like, oh no, it's going the other way.
All the producers in the building, all the reporters in the building, just throwing out what they had previous.
Yeah, rewrite. And it felt like the script was going to completely go the Timbers way and be this kind of dream comeback that never happened. But also Sean got a cut in the celebration. He had a cut on his face. From, I think it was Eber who jumped over on top of everybody and his foot like flips over.
The Jay Demerit. That's the Jay Demerit jump.
He was actually like bleeding. Yeah, he was like actually like bleeding after the game. I was like, are you all right? What happened, man? He's like, from the celebration, man.
Armando wouldn't have called that a yellow card in the game. Let him play, man. Let him play. That wouldn't have been a yellow card. And that's, I mean, thought Charlie made a good point in the post game show. And he and I always go back and forth, obviously, for instant replay about calls of just like from the start, Armando Villarreal just said, this is a final. You guys are going to play. Like, I'm not going to be out here throwing yellow cards up.
Everything. He just didn't give cards.
Correct.
There was a lot of whistles in that
but
game.
But I also,
which isn't his
when
fault.
It comes down to the end, where you're like Mabiala, you throw every, it's like you throw everything at that moment, right, to try and do it. I thought he actually goes with his chest and lays it off.
He wins
well
the ball.
Like
he wins
play,
the ball.
The play isn't
jump.
What's unfair. It's just dangerous with the elbow, right? That's what people are saying?
Sure.
I don't even think there's an elbow there. He like, you could argue maybe that he's holding him down, that there's no throw of the elbow. There's a hand like sort of down as you would when you jump. You might say, oh, he held Chanot down. Chanot's not jumping. Chanot is backing up into him with zero chance whatsoever to win this ball. He is not attempting to win this ball. There's no credible world in which Maxime Chanot would win this ball. And so I think just on the, I don't know, on the face of the game, like it was a physical game. It's the 94th minute. It's a ball into the box. Everybody's going to throw themselves at it. Like, it's not egregious. He didn't shove him over. He didn't reach out and push him down. He was bigger, stronger, had it timed better, got up. Count the goal, man. Like, anybody saying that video review should look at that? First of all, you're insane. You don't know what the hell you're talking about with clear and obvious. You don't. You just don't. That's never clear and obvious. I'm sorry. You just want him to re-referee the game. That's not what it's for. And you could, we can argue about other stuff with video review all day long. That particular play, never in a million years does he get that reviewed. That's the referee's call. He's right there. He sees it. Unless it's like, he just like suplexed him. Maybe that's a bad reference.
Oh,
sorry. That just popped in. I did, that was very random.
By the way, we've seen.
You don't go back to
we've seen this. We've seen this call go the other way recently. Like, it was very similar to the goal that Jamaica scored against the U.S. At the death, which was disallowed for the foul on Walker Zimmerman. And in both cases, right, I think it's a clear foul. I think the defender gets held down. And in both cases, like, it's going to be a Weeby tweeted this. It's going to be a controversial call either way.
It doesn't – if it goes the other way and they take that off, that whole stadium loses their mind.
Yeah. Portland burns.
Loses their mind. Yeah. Like, again. How could you, if you guys have told us all about the feelings, this woman's crying. And then if you go to video review and you're like, actually, there's just a little too much contact right there. We got to take it. Doesn't matter. That's the difficulty of being a referee. And I think sometimes we don't appreciate that stuff. It's easy to be like, oh, man, really screwed that one up. Like, oh, how could you possibly miss that? Oh, you have video review. You can watch it again and figure it out. Like, it's sometimes just a no-win world for referees, and that was definitely one of them for me.
I was glad they didn't call it, man. It made it more dramatic. Caitlin's right. Like, the game was actually kind of a fun and good game for tactics nerds for 75 minutes, and then it became like wild and chaotic in the last 15 minutes as Portland threw everything forward. But it wasn't going to be a particularly memorable MLS Cup final. And then that happened, and now it's like, everyone is going to remember that goal. Like, even though the Timbers didn't ultimately win MLS Cup, if you're a Timbers fan, like, you spend your entire life waiting for a moment like that. The type of joy you experience in for a goal like that is it's almost beyond words. So I was glad that Villarreal swallowed the whistle and played on, because it got us 30 more minutes. It was actually, I think, a pretty good extra time period, especially because NYCFC were dead on their feet and they were just trying to play through it. And you could see them kind of gaining resiliency as the seconds ticked away. Boy, if I was Portland, I sure would have liked to have Sebastian Blanco out there for that extra time period. But, you know.
That is one of the most ridiculous statements I've ever heard.
That was like,
why don't you hold a guy back just in case the game goes 30
David,
extra minutes?
David, you know it's going to be a close game. It's an MLS Cup final. The only team that gets blown out in MLS Cup finals is Seattle. Okay, you know it's going to be, you know it's going to be a close game. You know that the final 30 minutes of the game is winning time. Why would you not want Sebastian Blanco out there for that?
Uh-oh, they're coming for you.
Sirens are up.
Sorry, Anders is absolutely in the mud right now. Poor Anders.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, any final thoughts on the game, the day, the moment? We'll look ahead just a tiny bit. Just who's more likely to get back? What could happen with Tati and Maxi, etc.? Any center final thoughts?
I think, and obviously we're going back and forth with Doyle, but I do think you start
let it go,
have a
David.
Conversation about Gio Savarese.
Oh, all
right. I just think he's one of the best coaches in this league. What he can get out of players has been phenomenal. Their ability to change the way they play is one. They are lower in the league in doing that. Teams have ways to change games, and I think teams have made changes to change the flow of games and win. And Portland hasn't been capable of that pretty much in his entire time. Valeri's probably done, although he is under contract for next year. They picked up Char's option. They're negotiating with Sebastian Blanco. You'd assume Niyashkoda. You hope he becomes the DP forward you want. Maybe it's just about personnel, but that feels like the conversation around Portland a lot. And in terms of their ability to win the game because of tactical ideas and changes, I don't know that this team, I think that's part of maybe why they haven't won as many trophies as they could have. And so I thought that was one of the tough things that you come out of that game with. And then also feeling sad about Diego Valeri because he's such a nice person.
I hope we're not done watching Diego Valeri in MLS, whether it's Portland or
it doesn't
elsewhere.
Feel like we are. I mean, his words recently have really sort of reflected MLS, his desire to keep going.
He's 100% playing next year. The question is if it's in MLS or not.
Yeah.
Which would you rather see? Him in MLS or him somewhere else?
That's what I was going to ask. Like, do you think he would go to another club, though? I almost can't really picture that.
He doesn't think he's
with
done.
His history.
Javier Morales finished with Dallas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We've seen it a lot. I think what happened yesterday makes it less likely that he's done.
Yeah.
One, that he looked like he didn't look behind the game. And then obviously he misses the penalty. I think he'll want to play more. But coming in the 89th minute means that he's not in the plans for Portland. And so it's either going back to Argentina or he tries to get himself moved to another team in MLS. And I think he's okay with it, but that's just me.
If you're Nashville and you're like, you think you're one or two pieces away and you have a boatload of GAM and say, like, okay, Diego, we're going to bring you in and we're only wanting 1,200, 1,400 minutes from you from the regular season, but we want to make sure you're good to go for the postseason so that we can get you and Ani Mukhtar out there and we can win the type of game that we lost against Philadelphia. Like, doesn't that make sense for both the player and a team like that? And it's not just Nash. I mean, I think that if you could get him,
look,
if
you could play in the Western Conference, right, Diego, you stay in the West.
If you could get,
you're going to have three matchups against the Timbers.
If you could get him to buy in to like a super sub role, an El Senior role, he would make sense for Philly. He would make sense for Orlando. Like there are like,
It would make sense for KC,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
I think all those teams, because you said that and I was like, well, Philly could also use him off the bench.
I mean, RSL could use him, you know, like there's a, it's a pretty decent list.
I feel for Timbers fans. They're like already having like, the worst.
How are you doing this to us?
And they're like, yeah, don't do this.
By the way, RSL news, just dropped on Twitter, Pablo Mastroeni, full-time job for RSL. So, is that a quick question on that? Should there be regret or like, I don't know. I don't know what the right word is. Just disappointment maybe, in the Timbers, you know, fans, front office, ownership, player camps, just the fact they had these two Diegos for, I think it was 9 years, certainly since 2013. And you can quibble because obviously Diego Valeri was hurt over that period and he had some really bad injuries, but he was also an MVP.
They won MLS Cup the year he was hurt. He was hurt for most of the 2015 season, got healthy, and then they charged down the stretch. And anyway, go ahead.
Right. So they won in 15. They got to the final in 18, and of course in 2021 they lost both of those. They won the MLS's back tournament in 2020, and nobody else will ever, we hope, please, will ever match that ever again. Should they have gotten more out of this period? I mean, those are not just iconic players. Those are basically, if you're a GM or a sporting director in this league, like if you make one of those signings, for the rest of your life, you're like, I'm the guy that signed fill in the blank.
I mean, Valeri's a top five, number 10 in MLS history. Chara's a top five, number 6 in MLS history. Those are the two most important positions on any team, in my opinion. They got them in their prime. Those are building blocks of not just championship team. That it feels like that the Timbers had a window here to create a dynasty with those two guys.
Oh, they did, depending on who you ask.
Nope. I don't think even Timbers fans think there's a dynasty.
No, I'm just that was a shot at Dave. Yeah,
they
that
didn't
was a
win.
Shot at Dave. Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. Sorry, I forgot about that caveat. My bad.
I would like with those two guys. And the spend that they've put into other positions, it is like by no means am I saying that either Diego were disappointing individually or in team, but like you have to ask questions of the front office. Why were we able to sign those two guys and walk away from this 9 year era with only one MLS Cup and only one other championship of any kind during that time? Given those two building blocks, that's not enough. The Timbers front office didn't get it right enough times over the past decade to support them the way these two guys should have been supported, I think.
I think I agree with Doyle. I think back to like all the third DPs they have tried to sign that haven't hit. Lucas Milano, signings like that just weren't the right pieces. Valencia, like it just feels like they nailed it with those two, and in this league, not just having a number 6 and a 10, but like having guys under contract that you know you can build around, and that's what we're talking about with NYCFC, right? That core has allowed them to rotate through pieces around that. And so to have those building blocks, and obviously Seattle had Ozzie Alonso and Chad Marshall and then Stefan Fry, and that's sort of what allowed them to. They won with Nelson Valdez, and they won with Rui Diaz, but a core and a spine gives you that flexibility, and it doesn't feel like Portland maximized that. Now, as a sports fan whose teams never win, being competitive is really great, right? So three finals, four finals, a semifinal in the Open Cup. Like they've every year you come in and you could say the Portland Timbers could win MLS Cup. And every time they make the playoffs, you could say the Portland Timbers could win MLS Cup. But maybe they weren't the favorites that they could have been as consistently over the course of their times.
You always want to win more.
I have trouble with saying that they left something out or they didn't get enough out of that group. Three finals, three MLS Cups finals is not easy to do. Winning one of them. The second one is also against Atlanta, which was like, you know, Almiron and Joseph, like in their prime, just a special team. I think that was the year. Was that the year that Diego Valeri had that insane run of games? Where
no, that was the year before.
Goal after goal after goal.
That was the year before. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then this one really was done without Valeri. He was not a part of the run to the final. So it was much more on running off of Sebastian Blanco that really sort of transitioned to become his team. And I think when you look at MLS teams in the past that have maybe been super reliant on one player, one special MVP, and, you know, I think we've all agreed of the quality of Diego Valeri, I actually think that this says something about the Timbers and being able to transition away to survive from this time. And that has nothing to diminish from Diego Chara, who was incredible in this match. Like, watch, he got stronger as the match went on. In extra time, he's just tracking balls down, going, and the game went end to end, and like, Chara was the guy that was most up for it. Almost
poor Jesus
anybody
Medina
on the pitch.
Just got gobbled up. Just an easy snack for Diego.
I mean, it was incredible to watch. And I think if the Timbers would have come out on top, I think he would have been the MVP for me. But I actually think that this going to this final without Valeri says something about the Timbers as well, too. Disappointing, obviously, when you get one trophy out of it. But still, it does put them, I think they had an opportunity here to sort of lift the club up a level into the like another echelon. And I think, you know, Anders and the Sounders fans will be happy to see that not happening.
Was literally waiting for Anders in the chat. Was just waiting
in
that
moment. I just thought I'd just preempt him. But so I think that does feel where some of that kind of like bitter, bad taste in your mouth. And anytime you lose a final at home, like, that's just brutal to go through. But I have trouble saying that this was, that the preparation wasn't there, the pieces weren't there to get the best out of that group. I just think they kind of ran against a special Atlanta team. And then I do think yesterday will sting. It will be disappointing to host a final and not come away with the trophy.
So, Kalen, I agree with you, but the part that stands out to me is, why was yesterday the first time they ever hosted a final?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it, is like, they were never great for long stretches to be able to be a high seed or, you know, to host a game like this. And that's sort of what I go back to, is I agree with you when you look at the actual games. And I think John Champion said it in the conference finals, of like, no one would, an all-star team probably would have lost Atlanta on that night. That was just an absurd team in an absurd moment and atmosphere or whatever. But how does, 10 years into Diego Chara being on the team, is it their first final that they get to host? They didn't get to an Open Cup final and have that opportunity.
Only came close to a supporter shield once.
Exactly. And so that's, I think, where the frustration comes from, of like, you've had these two horses to kind of ride, and Weeby mentioned injuries. And as I said, they're on the other big pieces they've gone for, they've had issues and it's been in and out. I think that's where the frustration would lie if you choose to be. But if you're also happy with what you've seen, I think
it could be fine. A great era, right? I think this was, you know, with the exception of 2014 and 2016, this was unquestionably like a wonderful era for the Timbers. It could also be disappointing that they only got two trophies out of it. If you have, you know, two of the five best players in league history at their respective positions, and those happen to be the 6 and the 10, you should have more than that. Should.
Well, let us know, Timbers fans. I'm sure you got some thoughts on this one. 412060MLS. Oh, let's wrap up MLS Cup here on the NYCFC side. I believe they're going to have a celebration at City Hall.
Sold out.
At least that's what I saw. So pack that one up. See what's up with that one. But there are some question marks. I mean, Maxi's not under contract. Dave, I appreciate your research done earlier in the show on the Timbers ins and outs, because you weaved it well into that there.
Because I ignored what you were saying, so exactly. I could go read the article.
No, I appreciate that. That's what a four-man panel is for. Maxi's still got to figure that one out. Tati, we don't have any fresh rumors, but you would think after a season like that there would be renewed interest around Tati Castellanos as an option to potentially sell, transfer out.
You'd also think, one, it was part of the conversation when he re-signed, and two, winning a championship was the goal, right? Yep. So it feels like they've accomplished what he was here to accomplish, and you saw how much it meant to him. You know, this wasn't like, oh, if we win, either way, I just want this new contract, and then I'll go to Europe. Like, this
mom was there.
Yeah,
mom was there. You guys caught the moment.
They were crying right next to us and hugging. And you
did
know.
You cry?
Yeah, a little. I mean,
I would have.
Yeah,
I know myself. I would have cried. Sure.
Someone during the game when Valeri shot goes, if Valeri scores, I'm gonna cry. And you can like feel that emotion. But yeah, so I think in terms of why Tati came back, you've kind of written that whole story, and so it makes sense for everyone if the offer is there. For him to kind of take that
it's worth
challenge.
Mentioning, like, he had 6 goals in 1,400 minutes last year. He was not this guy last year. So it's not just, you know, win a trophy. It's become the type of number 9 that your talent suggests you can. Like, we went into this year.
Can I also just add?
Go ahead.
Can I add to that, too? Because he had 6 goals in his last 4 games.
Yep.
So like we're in like Tati High right now of Golden Boot, best offensive.
He scored,
you know,
he scored
player
19,
forward in the league. Like
he scored 19 goals
in the playoffs
in his
but,
last
like,
23 games. Was, 19 goals in his last
he was
23
going to,
games, man.
He was going to. There was a point this year where they might have missed the playoffs. Had he, and again, you can like, oh, revisionist history. He did do X, Y, Z, and he did. But there was a point this season where the narrative wasn't going to be quite so rosy. Was going to be more about maybe inefficiency and not meeting the expectations again as a club. But who? I mean, who cares at this point? They got it done. What is NYCFC? What's this mean for them as a club? This title. We've sort of danced around that a little bit in New York City as they work, and we know this is long term. And I won't give any more time or thought to it than that of trying to get a building for themselves. What did this mean? This is the first championship for New York City since the Giants in 11.
12.
They call that a title.
The crazy part to me is like it. Feels like they're still just kind of scratching the surface of what this club can become. Like it's like they've won MLS Cup, they've had star players, they've kind of, you know, done a bunch of different things, but like it still feels like there's way more ahead of them as far as potential goes. And you know, a lot of that comes around to them finding their own stadium, and like, you know, I think they've been derided by other teams and clubs and friends, you know, fans to say like, oh, you guys play in a baseball stadium, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And like, you know, fair game. It's all in the, that's a part of, you know, being a professional.
Well, the nice club thing is that a home team potentially could wear a star in Red Bull Arena here soon.
Oh gosh, that's brutal, man. I did see saying, Red Bulls like, was like trending yesterday on Twitter or something.
Yeah,
like
that was like, that was pretty funny. I have some very upset friends about it. I'll say that,
but like, you know,
go ahead, Caitlin. Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, and I was just gonna say that, like, it feels like they're right still on top. And first of all, they have the City Football Group resources, that, and they, you know, a lot of clubs have gone away from maybe the big spending. We've seen them try to go away from like the big name DPs, but have not found success. And they've been able to kind of go deep into their resources as far as City Football Group to get, you know, a ton of talent. So like, Talis Magno steps up and gets the game winner to send them to MLS Cup, and like, there's probably more for him to come as far as his development as a player. They get, you know, they have players where it's like, okay, Medina, he doesn't have to be the guy. Tati starts as a winger, then becomes the guy. They had Eber before, Tijuri Shradi, just have like a bunch of weapons. Rodriguez, like a lot of different options. Then they also have gotten good MLS experience with guys that they know they can trust, whether it's Sean Johnson. And the two center backs have been great. And then, you know, so they've also developed some homegrown talent as well. They've tapped into some of the New York talent as far as James Sands, and obviously Gio Reyna didn't end up playing for the club, but they've been bringing along
Joe Tavon Gray. Exactly. Tavon Gray is the second youngest player ever to start in MLS Cup after Aiden Morris, who did so well last year. Like it's
So it's really been like a balance. We've seen the teams when they are successful, they find that balance of like some homegrown players, some, you know, good international talent, young talent coming from South America that they can potentially sell on to somewhere else and make a profit off of, as well as that MLS experience blend. So, but it does feel like, you know, they could still become a much bigger player in MLS if they can kind of continue down this path. And, you know, I think a lot of it will come down to that. Getting that stadium done.
It's similar to what Philadelphia have done in terms of a reliance on young players from different backgrounds, whether it be homegrown or imported. The difference is that NYCFC will go out and spend $15 million on Talis Magno, Thiago Andrade, and Santi Rodriguez. I mean, Andrade didn't really feature during the playoff run, but Talis Magno had the game-winning goal against Philadelphia. He's an $8, $9 million player. I think Jim Curtin would have liked to have an $8, $9 million player to bring in off the bench in that game. Santi Rodriguez had the opener against the Revolution. You know, he was one of the stars from that great Uruguay U20 team from a couple years ago, and he's earmarked for big things in Europe. These are, like... This is.
We didn't even see Nicolas Acevedo in the playoffs.
Yeah. So, like, this is a different sort of pathway, and they seem to be leveraging both the City Football Group kind of worldwide network, but also the new rules in terms of the Young Money Initiative, the U22 Young Player Initiative, whatever it's called. I prefer the allocation disorder Young Money. That's Y-U-N-G money initiative to bring in players. And when you do that, the onus is on you to develop them. The onus is on you to put them into positions to succeed. You can't just bring them in and expect 20 goals. You have to be able to build players. If you're getting young players, whether it's from your academy or college or importing them from Brazil, you have to be able to make them better. And what NYCFC has consistently shown over the past 5 years with Jack Harrison, with Gio Reyna, with Joe Scally, now with all these kids who were on the field for this MLS Cup win, that they have the ability to make these guys better. And that is a massive advantage, especially when you pair it with the, you know, the deepest pocketbooks in the league, because everybody's going to say, look at the player salaries. NYCFC doesn't have the most expensive club in the league. Well, yeah, they spend that money on transfer fees. That's significant.
And that's the city scouting network, which is something that a lot of clubs, who look at their money and their spend and say, that didn't really match. I got to look at as well. By the way, this is our final note here. CCL berth for New York City FC. So they're one of five. Five MLS teams. Club de Foot, Montreal, Seattle Sounders, Rapids, New England Revolution, New York City FC from MLS will represent the league in CCL in 2022. Your four Liga MX teams, this is the way it goes. So you got to beat León, Cruz Azul, Pumas, and Santos Laguna.
Wait, Atlas?
You don't have.
Atlas isn't in for next year?
Atlas is not in. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
I think they go in the following year.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yep.
But so that's. But I think they can play. I think they can play Campeones Cup.
And that means Leagues Cup. Leagues Cup is going to be chef's kiss on freaking fire.
But Campeón de Campeón will happen, and then Atlas could win that and play in the Campeones Cup.
So you don't have either of the Monterrey teams in. The two Mexico City teams in are Cruz Azul and Pumas. But you don't have, like, América or et cetera. So this is an opportunity for MLS. I'm just getting your hope up now so we can crush it.
No, but I will say this before we crush it. I think you're looking at a Rapids team that will be fairly similar. You're looking at a Seattle team that will be fairly similar. Often it's teams that are kind of post-championship in a rotation. And NYCFC, I wouldn't be surprised if Tati leaves, but I think the plan is that Eber is the guy he was last year. Right. So for them,
Tyus Magno can make a move in.
Yeah. But for them stepping forward, I think they have most of the pieces to cover. The only question will be Alfredo Morales, Maxime Chanel, Maxi Morales. Are they still physically capable of doing what they're doing?
All right. Let's wrap it up. That's it. MLS Cup 2021, New York City FC. Huge congratulations. Really cool scenes. Hammerstein Ballroom, etc. on the ground. Like, congratulations. MLS is blue. New York is blue. You've been waiting for this for a long time. A lot of failures to get to this point, but this success, I'm sure, is much sweeter because of it. Let's talk half-day trade window! We're going to do a long show here, I guess. So, Lewis Morgan sealed to the Red Bulls from Inter Miami for $1.2 million in GAM. That's $700,000 in GAM in 2022 and $500,000 GAM in 2023. Inter Miami also signed a Brazilian midfielder, Jean Mota. And then I also signed a young forward out of Internacional that was Charlotte. Man, it's all mixing together. All these Brazilian
just
transfers.
Assume if they're from Internacional, they're going to Charlotte. Or if they're from Independiente de Valle, they're going to Charlotte.
Yeah, if probably out of the Ecuadorian league, which that's where they got their young DP, Alcivar, was a guy that Miguel Angel Ramirez obviously scouted against. But Tuesday's a big day for Charlotte. They have the expansion draft that day. They were busy in some other things as well here. Jalen Lindsay from Sporting Kansas City to Charlotte for $100,000 in GAM. That could rise to $325,000. Kansas City holds on to 15% for sell-on, and Charlotte gets his homegrown rights, which helps them with their roster construction. What do we think about this move? Dave, I'm going to throw it to you on this one because you've seen a good amount of Jalen Lindsay, or at least you've tweeted about it. Mm-hmm. I thought he was the right back of the future for Sporting Kansas City. Peter Vermes has been very complimentary of him in the past, and at the beginning of this year, he was the starting right back. Graham Zusi came into the team mostly via injury to Jalen Lindsay. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I think it's an awesome pickup for them because you have potential sell-on later. You've got a guy who has played some in this league, but if you put him in the right position, he can be better than what we've ever seen from him. And we've seen this from a lot of MLS teams or expansion teams of, like, picking up fullbacks, picking up maybe wingers from inside the league, and then they're probably going to go spend some big money on a center back to put alongside those guys. But right now, the idea of having a young fullback as a position where maybe he can learn and can give you some positive performance this year, and then for a team that has no academy, be a sell-on guy later, is pretty big and fits into your cap pretty well. So I like this move from them. I'm surprised from Sporting KC, and it sort of goes back to what we talked about coming out of their playoff loss of, like, Peter's going to tell us going into next year that they have the most homegrowns in MLS. But if they don't play and they're not a part of the rotation, then what's the value there?
This to me feels like a pre-expansion draft move from Kansas City, where they knew they weren't going to be able to protect somebody. And this is speculation straight up, where they weren't going to be able to protect somebody.
But you don't have to protect homegrowns.
I know, but so you go to Charlotte and you say, look, we need to make a deal. Jalen Lindsay's from Charlotte, so there is a connection there in that sense.
They also have Caden Pierre, 18-year-old right back for the USU-20s. Jalen Lindsay, I think, still could end up being very good, but he has lost multiple years to injury now. And you get a little bit of cash for him, and you create a pathway for...
A little bit,
not a ton. And you create a pathway for a young prospect who is not injury prone at this point and who has looked very good. He's looked better than USL quality when he has played for them. So I think it makes sense. We always talk about selling develop and sell. Well, sometimes those sales are going to happen within the league. And that's what happened with Jalen Lindsay here. And Sporting Kansas City did him right by sending him to his hometown as well. So I like to see that. Well done by both.
Vinicius Melo from Internacional, that's the 22-year-old center forward that Charlotte have signed. That fits directly, as we said, Dave, into, Miguel Angel Ramirez coached you at Internacional. He hasn't really gotten a chance in the first team yet or a long run, but clearly the coach saw a lot of him when he saw him, and he wants to bring him over, have a good rapport. There you go. Pablo Cisnega also to Charlotte from LAFC for $50,000 in GAM. That was originally via Sam Stachkal, via Paul Tenorio, via internet connection on a plane that got passed through. It was a report about a rumor, as you said, Dave. So congratulations to Sam for pawning off that tweet. And then to stick with LAFC here, this is one we should talk about. Edward Atuesta reportedly going to be moved to Palmeiras, who, of course, I think that was the team that was also in for Tati. So they're scouting MLS pretty hard here. For how many millions, Doyle? I think you had this number and I haven't.
It was around $4 million from what I saw, for 70% of his rights and a $1.8 million a year contract. Look, Palmeiras is one of the giants of South America. They are one of the biggest and best clubs in South America. And I don't blame Edward Atuesta for saying, like, yeah, this interests me. But, like, I thought this guy was going to go to Europe for $10 million. Like, he was so good in 2018, 19, and most of 2020 before he got hurt. Obviously, he wasn't as good this year, but, like, if you're just going to sell him to another club in the Americas, man, make him a DP, pay him something obscene, and say, we're going to build a team around you for the next 8 years. And if he doesn't
Why does that matter? Why does it matter if it's in the Americas, if the money is there?
Because because we all know that the pathway MLS is trying to create for young South American players is come here and then we'll sell you to Sevilla or Wolfsburg or, I don't know, Everton or something. Like, it's not to go from, you know, Once Caldas to LAFC to Palmeiras. So it's a little weird. It's disappointing in the same way that Jefferson Savarino was a little disappointing that he didn't end up getting sold to a European team, and it's disappointing to me because Edward Atuesta was my favorite player in the league to watch for the past 3 or 4 years. He was just awesome. So LAFC they have a hell of a offseason ahead of them trying to figure out what their team is going to be like next year.
Don't have a head coach. They did exercise the option on Vela, but no Edward Atuesta, according to what's going around right now. Let's see. We don't have the expansion draft list. We can't really talk about that, but we can watch Kalen on Tuesday night. You can go check MLSsoccer.com, and I'm sure Charlotte FC's social channels for information on the expansion draft, how that's going down, how you can watch. Well, I'm sure we'll all be busy tweeting about it and all the trades that come with it. Nashville, super busy. We're just calling Mike Jacobs the tax man. Because if you're not prepared, you don't come in ready to file, he's going to need $250K in GAM. Like, he's going to need it from you to exchange that international roster spot. They traded 4 international roster spots in this half-day trade window for $1 million in GAM, $250K each. 2 to Charlotte, 1 to NYCFC, 1 to FC Dallas. And Mike Jacobs just collected on the back end. I think the way I think about this, for those out there, they're like, well, what, why he's not going to use those international roster spots? He doesn't care about those? Well, it's a question. What do you want more, that international roster spot, or do you want the $250K in GAM? With the way that they've built their team, that GAM is probably more valuable, whether as an interleague transfer asset or as to buy contracts down. You know, they've had to re-sign some players, Dax, et cetera. Walker's a TAM guy. Yeah, I mean, the GAM is more valuable to Mike Jacobs and Nashville SC, but I still think they're a couple pieces away from being the team that they want to be. They went out and got Teal Bunbury in this window as well. That's going to be certainly a culture guy. So is Ethan Zubak. I think Teal was 75K in GAM up to 150, and then Ethan Zubak was the 21st pick in the 2022 Super Draft to the Galaxy, and LA had no pick, so that's their pick now. By the way, Teal finishes his career in New England as the 4th highest goal scorer in club history, which I did not know, but the release told me. 45 goals over 231 games. So, nice career for Teal in New England, but going to a Nashville team that we'll probably ask of him. What do we think of all this? We've got people hitting us up, you know, about, you know, hey, we just acquired a buttload of GAM. What do you think we're going to do with it? You know, is this the best? Is this the winner of the half-day trade window? What do you think, Kalen?
Well, they've been able to find a lot of value within the league, especially with assets that people thought were like diminishing assets. It's weird to call a player an asset. I'm going to take that back. yes, I blame that for having to do all this gam tam talk. It's just like, but I think a lot of people thought maybe CJ was not going to be the CJ that we saw this year, or Dax or Godoy. You know, you go through the list, even Romney, yep. You know, had a really great season. So they've been able to really identify players. Yeah, they've been able to identify players that have brought a lot of value. I think for this, it's like they're going to be able to keep that money to be able to use on more, you know, look, we saw them sort of splash what people thought was a lot of money on Walker Zimmerman at the time because they had that allocation money. And now,
look. Now that's just 4 international roster spots. That's nothing, man. That's all it was.
I do think they'll have to go out and add some international quality as well, too. Or, like we talked about before, get more out of the guys that are currently there, because they have some pieces on that haven't necessarily been able to really hit as of yet. But we saw what happened with Hani Mukhtar from 1 year to the next.
Yeah,
how he was able to hit and so, in a big way. So you have to hope that you can get a big step in the progression from Loba looking towards next year as well.
Just two things that come to mind for me. One is, we've seen a few times CJ Sapong be really good his first year at a club or first year on a contract and then struggle the next year. So you sort of have a little bit of a safety net. We're bringing in Ethan Zubak and Teal Bunbury. I don't think you want to be starting those guys, but you can. The other would be, for anyone out there that's just wondering, international spots reset at the end of the year. This is not sold for $250K. The teams that acquire this, they then have to acquire another one next year if they don't fill
it. They're renting. This is passive. Is passive income for Mike Jacobs.
That's a lot of money for Nashville for something that's like not a permanent issue that they have to deal with down the road. The only question would be if they brought someone in this year and they didn't have a spot, which then, yeah, it'll be a higher price, but you can go back and buy it if you really need to. So it makes sense for the way they've built their roster.
Yeah,
I think it's about. They know what they want. They know what they want to do and what roster spots they're going to need in their plan. Like, if there's one thing about Nashville you can give them credit for, is that they've been pretty strategic, and they've stuck to sort of the path that they were going to take, even when there have been little bumps and little moves that didn't work out, or big moves like Ake Loba. So I think if you're Jacobs, you're looking at the rest of this year and you're saying, I'm not going to need to use these. And by the way, 100K in GAM, like, what did Alex Mwiel cost them? You know, you're getting a couple different players. Now, you need to have more impact from the guys being paid more. Randall Leal, I'm going to put that one out there. Like, from an attacking perspective, it can't all just be Hani for MVP if you want to take the next leap, right?
Yeah.
Ake Lobo is an obvious one. But this feels like a continuation of what they're going to do, because I don't think they spent a bunch of money, right? They spent a bunch of money in the transfer market on Ake Lobo. That was a club record signing. Rodrigo Pinheiro, I don't think he's going to be back. He cost a good amount of money in the transfer market. It may just be that they're saying, look, We don't need the international roster spots because we don't plan on going out and spending a boatload of money on transfers. We're going to be a little bit closer in improving our team to like the Colorado Rapids model where, you know, like Kellen Acosta was a $1.2 million player, right? Mark Anthony Kay. Like if you could trade four international roster spots you weren't going to use and get a Mark Anthony Kay caliber player in return, that's a pretty good trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
If you weren't going to use them anyway, like if you're not in a desperate strait, like the team's coming to them being like, oh, please, please, Nashville, do you have international roster spots to spare? We need them.
Where are they from? Where are these people
from? They're begging. Charlotte, NYC, if it,
I just,
Dallas.
The accent. I wasn't sure what that accent was.
I don't know. I was a little bit Oliver Twist there.
Got it. Like, yeah, you know, like, it did seem like one.
Like a street urchin.
Also,
I don't
to
know
be clear
that...
on numbers, they would be able to afford Austin Trusty and Mark Anthony Kay with this number. Like that's how much they got for
how much
allocation.
Was Mark Anthony Kay? Mark Anthony,
$650, I thought.
$650. Austin Trusty was like $750.
No, I thought it was $400.
No, Austin Trusty was a little bit more than that. I think.
Okay. Either way, sell another international roster spot and you're good. And they have Gam and they have Tam on the back.
Do we think that do we think that this team is really one piece away?
I think that.
Let's say Ezli Akeloba hits.
Can Akeloba play the wing? Can he play the wing? Because like
he can. He's not.
Maybe CJ.
Good there.
I guess CJ could play the wing.
No.
I don't think that's the problem.
I know. Loba's got a hit
to me. Loba is good. CJ Sapong's not playing that many minutes, and this team's probably is better than they were last year. Doyle, to your question, yeah, if Ake Loba hits and Dax holds up this year, maybe you could tell me that they use some of this to upgrade the other center back spot, as good as Romney has been. I think that's a spot of improvement for
so
them.
Do you think they stay with the three in the back, or do they go back to a back four?
I assume they go back to a back four.
I mean, they have Jack Maher. He was, I thought, true. Very, very good.
Yeah. To me, the depth is central midfield. That's where you would focus a little more on the next generation and then on the wing.
Yeah. What I think happened here is it was just an opportunity to gain allocation money for flexibility. And I kind of expect that DP slot to stay open till midseason, because by midseason, they'll have an idea of where they need to use that on. And it might still be the number nine, right? Akai Lobin might not hit. But I think this team is a piece away. I really do. I think this team is really good.
I picked them to win it this year. I thought they were that close. That didn't obviously work out, but new stadium as well next year. So, you know, have some good energy looking ahead. I would hope that they wouldn't wait too long. I think this team knows who they are at this point as far as what they need and to be able to evaluate that roster. So I would hope that they would make moves earlier. And I think a dynamic winger would suit them well.
So you think they're going back to the 4-2-3-1 as well then?
I think it would work for them. I mean, they can go with three in the back. They might need to be flexible throughout the year, depending on Walker Zimmerman's availability and people stepping in and out of the lineup. Alistair Johnson is going to be gone some with national team, so they're going to be able to probably have to switch between that. But when I just look at the roster and like the pieces that the type of profile of a player that they don't have, I think they have some good options through the middle, but somebody that can really change the game as far as wide play, besides like it turned too much into those outside backs who are great, but getting forward and whipping in balls, but somebody that has a little bit more of a dynamic one-on-one ability to break somebody down off the dribble or create something. It was Hani at a lot of different times, but more through the middle of the pitch. Whereas if you begin to get some of that whip, not just from the outside backs, but somebody that can kind of either play tucked in underneath and be in that 4-2-3-1 area, or can get isolated out wide, I could see, you know, one type of game changer like that. So I like some of the moves they made up top as far as step pieces. I think they'll be able to add something.
Teal can play wing. He could play up top if you need him, but I would think he'd be more of a wing option for them. And then just character guys. It says a lot to me about Nashville that they can miss on some of these DP and young player signings in Pinero and TBD on Ake Loba. It's the David Goss theorem. He could just absolutely wax the entire league next year.
And Rodrigo Pinero.
Yeah, I don't know. Pinero seems like he's going to be gone on loan.
Thomas
TBD,
Chekho.
Who knows?
Who knows?
But it says a lot to me that they have a foundation and flexibility within even those failures that might sink another club to be not just a contender in their second season, a playoff team in their first, but maybe more going forward with a beautiful new stadium. So I think they've done a nice job. We'll finish with these. Tom Bogert reporting that Ignacio Alceda, there's another young young DP that we can say adios to. He's going to Lugano FC. Joe Mansueto owns both clubs. So
and yeah. Chicago re-signed Gaston Jimenez to a new 2-year DP contract.
2 years.
I wouldn't have.
Two touchdowns.
I wouldn't
have. He's a D-mid who needs another D-mid to protect him.
And they actually went out and spent a good amount of money on the D-mid to protect him, who's actually good.
I like Fede Navarro, but like...
Yeah, he's really good.
Gaston Jimenez has not played at a DP level past cup. Anyway, Chicago Fire.
Anyway, some other moves. Hey, the Dynamo picked up Daniel Starris from the Galaxy for a third-round super draft pick. LAFC, another LAFC move. They sent they picked up Franco Escobar. Sorry. Starting 250K in GAM, could rise to 600 from Atlanta United. We're not going to really talk about those, but on Thursday we will if you tell us to. Tom Bogert is coming around. We're going to talk expansion draft. We'll have, of course, all the results from Tuesday, all the trades that happened during that open window during the expansion draft. We'll talk free agency that will happen on Wednesday. It'll have opened up. We'll probably have some signings. Try to look ahead to the rest of the winter until we come back in January. So if you have questions, comments, topics, players, teams, etc., hit us up right now.
Wait, I have a
one
question.
Piece of mail from
I have a question. Go How ahead. Much GAM are we getting from Charlotte for loaning Kalen out to them for the expansion draft tomorrow? Like, what's the payment That's look true. Like for extra time?
Yeah, what's on the...
Wow.
Is it Anders, solidarity payments?
Anders is saying that he can't disclose the details. Okay, Anders, I see how it is. That's fine. I'm done.
Typical. Cloak and mirrors. Cloak and mirrors from
First
Anders.
First time in Charlotte.
It's Charlotte's time now. It's Charlotte's time now. NYCFC had their moment, all right? This is all Charlotte's time. Ivan Ornelas, we'll finish here. How long do you think it will take for a third club to get at least 4 MLS Cups to match DC United for second most all time? Galaxy have 5, DC have 4, and then there are 5 teams with 2, Dynamo, Seattle Sounders, Sporting Kansas City, Columbus, and San Jose. Who gets to 4?
Oh, Dynamo.
Dynamo. Pat Onstad, TID, let's go, Pat!
Yeah. I think I'd probably have to take Seattle first.
Daniel Starris header on the far post to win the whole thing.
Done.
It's a really good Finished. Question. Locked it's in. A really good question, yeah. man.
It is a really good question. I like that because in the ones, because there's some twos in there, like no offense to the Quakes, like feels right now, maybe like that's not going to be in the offing. Dynamo, probably the same. Sporting in Seattle, yeah, okay. Crew, yeah. The Fire have one, Toronto have one, Portland have one, Rapids have one, RSL have one, Atlanta have one, and New York City now have one.
I mean, if NYCFC, brings back the same team next year, if they don't sell Tati, then they'd be among the favorites. Then we would have this conversation next year.
They still
got
to win 3 in an expanding league.
Yeah.
I still think if they sell Tati, they'll be one of the favorites.
You're a big Eber guy.
You know that.
It's true. I'm a big Ever guy too. I hope he can get right, healthy.
Hey, I think this is the let us know what you think. This is the last show of 2021 for Kalen and Doyle. It'll be Charlie and Tom with Dave and I on Thursday. Any final thoughts? Anything to send yourself off into the sunset? Like if you need to take a Charlie break, Dave, you can do so.
Just big up. Congrats to Sean Johnson. That'll be my final words of 2021. Sean, MVP of MLS Cup. And champion. Love to see it.
Doyle, anything from you? Any lingering memories? Any fond missives you might have about this league that occupies so much of your mental space time?
I still have written content coming out. I'm finishing up the season-long post-mortem. So 27 different columns about what 2021 meant to your team with an appropriate GIF for each one. That's just about done now, coming out on the website.
What's your GIF process? Because I always enjoy those. No, I mean, like, the written stuff and all your insights. Great, but what's the process?
I cannot give away my secrets. Are you kidding me, Weeby? Come on, man. That's why I'm still employed, right. Man. Jeez.
Yeah, just checking to see if you might want to go there.
Yeah, he had to.
I said, is it Charlie break?
He had to
go pee. Oh, okay. He had to use the restroom. Yeah,
got it.
Nah. That's a Charlie
this
break.
It's a long show.
Charlie would have just asked, but yeah, that's it. Hey, Dave's back.
He's back. Wow,
perfect.
Are you guys still on?
Yeah, we're here.
This is
waiting for you.
The show.
Yeah, okay. You want to send us out, Dave? Send us out.
On that note, the best show in New York, New York. And this and that from the AT&T Virtual Studios. Go home, everyone.
Real strong ending from us there. All right, folks. We'll see you on Thursday. Adios.